I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
And welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, today it is the one-year commemoration of the life and impact of George Floyd. We've been talking about what Mr. Floyd's death really means. And the big question that people are asking is, has there been any progress in this country over the past year? One of the big pieces is that now we're talking about race like never before, according to some. Others would say that there has been some changes in policing. I mean, there was the verdict of Derek Chauvin, George Floyd's killer. But then there were also issues of change in how police do their job. But I want to take this conversation a step further and say, well, has there really been a change in us? Have we been seeing that we have been able to kind of move forward or use this moment along with all of the conversation, along with all of the corporate statements, along with all of the talk about there needs to be a change? Have we, those who are impacted the most by unjust policing, have we said that enough is enough, that we're going to do some things differently, that we're going to fight for justice differently, that we're going to possibly flood the enrollment of police departments across this country so that way we can have our face in the department? I mean, have we moved forward? And most importantly, have we mentally, emotionally, and spiritually taken time to reflect on this moment, to ask ourselves the question, what's required of me? What do I need to do at this moment to make sure that the life and of George Floyd is not in vain, but more importantly, that my life can be used to bring about a change? Maybe I'm asking for too much, but I wanted to have this part of the conversation with someone that's going to give us some insight about all of these things. We've had her on the show before, when the killing of George Floyd happened. And so we're happy to have her back again today. At this time, she serves as the director of the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University. We welcome back to the airwaves of WEAA and For the Culture, Dr. Larice Edwards. Good evening, Dr. Edwards. How are you, ma'am?
Good evening, Faraji. How are you? How you been?
I've been all right, Dr. Edwards, considering has been happening.
I know, it's a lot going on.
You know, and I hear that a lot, Doc, and I wonder, I mean, you do this. You do community health, you do work in psychology, mental health work. People say it's a lot going on. And I'm trying to think, and I always wonder to myself, have we, by acknowledging there's a lot going on, have we put ourselves in a place where we feel disempowered?
Talking for me for I'm having a hard time hearing you.
No, I was just asking.
I missed the last part of your question.
Sure, I was just saying, by us saying that there's a lot going on, have we put ourselves in a place where we feel disempowered to change our condition?
Well, you know, power is a very strong word. And I think that there are people in power and people who are powerful who want to make a change in our conditions. But I certainly believe that in order for us to do that, you know, in public health, we always talk about the social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. And those are the conditions in which people are born, live, pray, and play. But we have to talk about those structural conditions, because those structural conditions, those structural determinants are what propel the social ones. And if we go back and look at that, we will see that it's those policies, those race-based policies. It's about racism, structural racism, all of those things that have been put in place, of course, premeditated and put in place, that keeps us having these same damn conversations. I heard one of your guests earlier on. I jumped on and started listening, and he said, we are still having the same conversations. Well, we're still having the same conversations because we still have the same policies. And until we begin to break down those policies and put policies in that are focused on equality and equity, we will have these same conversations. And Brother Faraji, for the ride, we've been having these conversations more than 400 years. We have to ask ourselves, when we gonna get tired
of being sick.
Saying the same old thing?
Let me tell you, sis. I know. And that's why I think that for us to even frame this 1 year, people always ask, well, what's going to be done? I think personally, Dr. Ed, was that when people say, all right, well, what's changed in America? Has things improved? It may not be the best metric to use, because it creates this expectation that change happens overnight. And I'm saying overnight. People say, well, you're talking about 1 year. I'm saying that's overnight compared to the 400 plus years that we've been suffering.
Exactly.
So how do we temper those expectations for change with the reality of change?
Well, you know, one thing that I learned from my pastor about change is he said we should not despise incremental or small beginnings.
Okay.
But they must be sustainable and consistent.
Yeah.
And it's been so much going on before, I mean, for real, before we can get past one event or one episode, something else has come up. So in looking at what's life like 1 year after George Floyd, nothing. I mean, a couple of years ago, I was talking with some, I think it may have been your show, or somebody's show on EAA, and we talked about what's it like 5 years after the death of Freddie Gray. We're talking about 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Right. Right.
So the one thing I will say that these conversations do is that they keep the subject alive.
Yeah.
Because when you don't talk about it anymore, it seems to go away and it's swept underneath the rug.
Especially in 2021.
With that in mind, we don't get anywhere.
Right. But I would say, just to say, Doc, especially in 2021, where we talk about social justice today and might be talking about, I don't know, cicadas tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the time span, our attention span for these things is very short, very limited. So,
well, you know,
yeah.
When we're talking about equity, that's a conversation that we've had for a long time. And that's a conversation that we must continue to have.
Yes, ma'am.
And to hold people who hold the power that we talked about to make changes with these policies that keep black and brown people in a caste system.
Right, right. Doc, I want to invite our listeners to join us in this conversation. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Tonight we're talking to Dr. Edwards, director of the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University, talking about some of the changes. Let's talk about the trauma. Let's talk about the mental health struggles as we are in this moment of acknowledging the death and the killing of George Floyd. And so I want you to join us in this discussion, 410-319-8888. Doc, I was on MPT special last night. We were talking about what's next for racial justice. And I asked the question to Dr. Ray Winbush about this this place that we find ourselves in very often, which is you have the verdict of Derek Chauvin coming in. He's guilty on all charges. And then literally the very next day, you hear about 2 to 3 major cases of police misconduct and brutality. And so posing that question to Dr. Winbush, you know, how do we make sure that we find some balance, some sanity between this dynamic of having being hopeful, but also being in a, you know, in a space of uncertainty? We're vacillating between the two worlds, and it seems like that's where Black people live in this country. So I'm gonna pose that same question to you.
Black people have lived since we got here in 1619.
Yeah. So how do we find that sanity? Do we, or should we not even fight? Should we not even strive to get sanity within those dynamics and really look at a different model?
I think that basically we have people who don't know, and let's really add the icing on the cake here.
Yeah,
you know, for the last year and more, we've been doing something that not many people in this country is aware of. Now, I have an aunt; she'll be 102 in December.
Wow.
She lived through the Spanish flu, and thus far she's still living in the COVID-19 era. But we've had a pandemic, and that pandemic created trauma. And trauma is anything that's life-altering. So all of our lives have been altered to some extent. And what this pandemic did was it highlighted all the things that have been going on over time and across circumstances. Police brutality, health inequalities, unemployment, poor housing. I mean, all of those things, the skin was ripped off. So that only compounds the things that we see in the systems that perpetuate injustices for Black and brown people.
Yep. Gotcha.
So it's a lot going on. So we are, in general, we are a resilient people and a hopeful people based on our ancestors, based on epigenetics, the genes that we carry from our ancestors.
But that, Doc, I mean, you're right. We are resilient. We're very hopeful in our genetic makeup. But even in that, our genetic makeup has been altered because of the trauma.
It has.
And as a result of that, that has been our resiliency has gotten weaker. Would you agree or disagree? Because we're living in modern day America, and that's why I'm asking it. Like, we're living in modern day America. We're seeing all of these things happening where our humanity, our very existence seems to be under attack. And therefore, the resiliency that our people had was really rooted in spirituality. It was rooted in our unity as a people.
Exactly.
Whereas now, the enemy of our rise has done a hell of a job to disrupt our unity and now has created individualism among us rather than a communal suffering. And then at the same time, we've certainly been disconnected from the Creator in many ways. And so, you know, we got a lot of restoration to be done. So I'm just, can you speak to that?
I feel you, and I believe some of what you're saying, but I was all the way on that other side. But what I see and what I've seen getting through and navigating this pandemic is people's resilience.
Okay. Still.
Now, it may be somewhat compromised.
Right.
But we still hold on.
Sure.
And I think what keeps us holding on is the faith that we have and the hope. Now, if you talk about uncertainty in agnotology, we can look at the last administration,
right,
which in my mind perpetuated all of that and had everybody in the mindset of uncertainty.
Sure.
But I think things are moving now slowly, but people may still feel hopeless, but not as hopeless as they did over the past 4 years. And we have to keep all of that in mind. We
yes,
are strong people, I'm telling you.
No, I get it. I agree.
I go, some of the people I see, it's just some people probably can't even fathom the strength that we have to fight. And we need it all because the injustices and inequalities that black and brown people live through on a day-to-day basis are mind-boggling.
Right. You're absolutely right. Let's go to the phone.
And we just got to realize, you know what? I'm going to tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things. One is we got to believe in, when we talk about justice, particularly police justice or justice in our correctional systems. Chimelle Bell, she said it best. It's impossible for us to be unarmed when our blackness is the weapon that white people fear, especially policemen. Those are one of the things that I think we have to hold on to when it comes to our justice system. We know that there are two Americas. All of these things. You talked earlier on your show about the Kerner Report. Well, the Kerner Report, when it was redone and we got the report results back in 2018, it indicated that we are worse off than we were 50 years before.
Come on.
You know, I believe that one of the most deadliest forms of violence is poverty. People are trying to live, and many of them don't even have a livable wage. And these things are all done on purpose.
Sure.
Sure. They're not an accident.
Sure.
You know, if you don't have a viable wage, then you can't work. You won't have a job that's going to pay you what you need to make just to live. And some people are working and they can't even afford health care.
Absolutely.
They go to health care for the homeless. And all of these things are constantly perpetuated. If we go to my little brother and colleague, Dr. Lawrence Brown, and we go look at his book, The Black Butterfly, The Harmful Politics of Race in Baltimore, those things are not accidents.
No, not an accident.
And they have been existing for decades.
Dr. Edwards,
you don't
I want
about change.
And you know what? I want to throw some of our listeners into this mix because they're checking in. Let's go to the phone lines 410-319-8888. Let's go to Jamar then Octavia. Jamar, thank you for your patience. What's your take? We got Jamar. All right, let's go to Octavia.
Hello, how you doing, Faraji and Doctor?
How you doing, Octavia?
I'm hearing so many key words and of several of the callers that's relevant to me and to everybody in the brown community. One, we have been conditioned for so many years to feel inferior to Caucasian people, the Caucasian race. Two, yes, we tried with the love and having hope, with our faith and so forth. We did go there. Then we also went into, like, you know, all right, we tried this, we tied, we set up, that we went to the Black Panther movement and feeling strong and starting to feel empowered in ourselves. And then what? With the type of technology, we was able to see that we were still in the place, like y'all say, for the many years of being what? Discriminated upon, being racist upon. And that conditioned us to feel like, well, who cares about us? So it's about survival of the fittest, and it caused the ones who don't know to do even more harm to their own community for the lack of not knowing. And what happens, where it comes from, exposure. When you look on TV, and I thank God for 88.9. I love 88.9. But how many of our people are really listening to 88.9? They're listening to all kinds of other stuff. When you go to TV, what are they exposing us to? Some of the things you couldn't even hear or see on TV before is out there. So if we want to bring change, we got to start to condition the minds about what will we see. We are visual people. So we, the things that we see, we are influenced by the things that we hear. If you keep saying and showing us that you don't care and who cares and showing all the negatives and not enough positives, you're exposed to TV through these apps on these telephones that now even our children are idolizing. And they're not alone because adults are cheap. So we have been conditioned now to have the access to the telephone. But one time we bet not had a telephone. That was only for doctors.
Let me ask you this, Octavia. I want to get your take on where we are with 1 year later looking into George Floyd's killing.
And even to the 1 year going into what? And I was going to say that because the doctor, I was just trying to get down to it with the doctor. Like she said, it's a process and it takes time. But guess what? We can't get quiet. What? They arrested him and the other police, it was like, okay, good. And then when they arrested him and the people said, all right, he's going to be charged, all that quiet down. We can't get quiet, but we have to find a solution by finding a way of connecting and not going against our own leaders that have made it to these positions and not forget the goal, where we want to go, and not just for our thing, but for what we think.
Absolutely. Octavia, thank you so much for checking in. Dr. Edwards?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you know what, Brother Faraji?
Yes, ma'am.
The other piece to this whole thing is George Floyd. When you look at a public execution of a black man, what it says, and I hope people are listening, is that white people don't see the humanity in black folk.
Mm.
And when you don't see that, what else matters?
Mm.
So what? We got low wages. So what? Look at Dr. Susan Moore, the active practicing physician who died from COVID, who was on YouTube talking about how she was treated as a practicing physician and a black woman.
Mm.
And by the time they transferred to another hospital, she shortly died thereafter.
Mm.
The other thing that we have to keep in mind, too, is we're not a monolithic, except for, in my opinion, two things. One, when it comes to health care, and two, when it comes to police brutality and the Division of Corrections.
Right, right.
So right. We have to take our knowledge, and I know some folk may disagree with me, but we can't keep waiting forever. We have to do what we need to do for ourselves. We have to put our money in black communities. We have to know the history of the country. So many people don't know the real history, and they don't want us to know the history. But we have to make sure that we know the history, particularly Baltimore. I don't know how many listeners are aware that Baltimore was the model for racial residential segregation, the model for the whole entire country. When a black man, McMeekin, who graduated, who was the first person to graduate from Morgan State University, bought a house in a white neighborhood, they created ordinances to say that black people can't live in certain areas.
Mm.
We need to have the knowledge that's necessary to empower us to run the fight, to ride the fight. And that knowledge is, much of it is history. Because when you hear how we survived and what we did and our contributions, if that does not energize you and inspire you, I don't know what will. And I think that's the starting point for us. We cannot and we should not continue to have these same conversations.
I agree with you, Dr. Edwards. I agree
with
you.
We should be having conversations about solutions.
I agree with you. And I think
how do we get our schools to teach our kids? Schools now, according to some social scientists, are nothing but poverty storage facilities.
I agree.
How do we make sure that when our kids graduate,
yeah,
that they are on online for getting a job. It doesn't have to, they don't have to go to college. They can learn a skill.
Right.
But if we continue to be silent, silence is complicity.
Dr.
We
Edwards,
have to take back what belongs to us.
Dr. Edwards, I want to put you on a quick pause. When we come back, I want you to continue the conversation because we still got more folks that want to join us in the discussion. So, I mean, I like the direction you're going in, which leads us to our final point, which is dealing with the big issue of how do we make sure that we get something out of this moment. The call for defunding the police has been a clarion call for a lot of people, especially in light of the death of George Floyd. Now, there's a possibility because crime has jumped dramatically in this country over these past few months, that people are saying not defunding the police, but refund the police. There might be some new conversation that we need the police now more than ever. So let's talk a little bit about that, and let's continue to talk about the trauma and the pain. Let's continue to talk about, you know, the fact that of finding the of fighting for the life that George Floyd did not give up himself to be a martyr. He would have chosen to live, and that we should fight to live a better life. Join me, 410-319-8888, and certainly post your comments at Faraji Muhammad. Stay riding with us, folks. We got a lot to get to in the final 30 of For the Culture on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture. Right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for joining us and being a part of the conversation tonight as we continue to talk about what happens next. 1 year after the death and killing of George Floyd, we are still at a crossroads in this country. And tonight, we've been talking about what the impacts are. Now, we know how we got here and why we are possibly staying in this place. But now, we should be start asking ourselves, well, what do we do to take us further along? Joining me in this conversation has been Dr. Larice Edwards, who serves as the director of the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University. But I want you to join us as well at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Dr. Edwards, one of the things that, as I'm hearing these conversations, well, first, let me do it. Let's go back to the phone line because I know we still got some people that want to check in. Then I'm going to bring this other piece into the conversation. So let's go to Jamar,
okay.
Then Byron. Jamar, thank you for checking in.
I do. I heard of that brother Pierce up here in Bel Air, Maryland. Man, he's a good dude. He was disabled in Baltimore for 14 years, man. He lived a very hard life, lost teeth, drug addict, did a whole bunch of stuff. Prior to that, he was a graduate student at Drexel University, and his fiance is a senior vice president at Comcast, the ex-fiance. But after he left Baltimore, he came back out here to Harford County, checked himself into a mental health program, and then he came out a published author, had a 4.0 for three semesters. But the school he went to discriminated against him. He just lost a lawsuit, a two-year-long lawsuit with that. And then the girl who came at him, the one who crushed his baby's skull, she's Native American, and she's hiding behind the local police and everything like that around here. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. There's another boy who's named Russell. He smashed, well, he's beating on black women all around here. He lives in the same house as the girl who smashed his kid's head, and it's all police-oriented and government-related. But he used to work at the local Edgewood Popeyes. He put Abbott Harford County on the map on TMZ for beating on black women. And nobody does anything about the stuff in Harford County. It's so guarded. Roger, we need some help up here, especially for the guy Pierce, man. Please, everybody be at 15 South Main Street first thing in the morning because we need to get this guy some help. He's a great dude. He's a published author of a self-help book. He's an amazing guy. Please help him.
Okay.
Thank you for watching.
Thank you so much. I hear you loud and clear, Jamar. Thank you for checking in. We're going to talk to see if what we can do to help the brother out. Let's go back to the line. We got Byron on the line. Byron, thank you for checking in. What's your take about that?
How y'all doing?
I'm good.
What's going on in our community is that the, you know, the immune system has been taken out of our community and is allowed to have poison come into our community. We used to have men who would stand up, we wouldn't allow drugs in our community, beating on women, crime running rampant. And since that's been taken out, and people don't want to do the right things like boycott and things like that, it's like we want a revolution that's wrapped in a red bow. There's no sacrifice. It's like we're not willing to give up anything. Sometimes you have to give up stuff to gain stuff. And it's like a lot of people don't want to give up anything.
What do we have to, as it relates to George Floyd at this moment, what would be the biggest thing that we need to give up at this point, Byron?
Well, first of all, I'm trying to get people to boycott the pagan holiday Christmas and boycott that to show America that we put a lot of money into the economic system
okay.
and we get nothing for it. You know, but if we keep coming up with excuses, why we don't want to do this, why we don't want to do that, we don't want to sacrifice a lot of us. And that's the problem. You know, it's not a revolution comes in all sizes. It's not easy. It's difficult. And it's a struggle. That's why it's called a struggle. And if you don't struggle, you're not willing to struggle, you're not going to get anything.
Gotcha.
And a lot of us don't want to give up nothing to get something.
Gotcha. So Byron, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. I think you're bringing up a good point. Dr. Edwards, I want to bring you back into this. I think Byron is bringing up a good point that in order, like, from the vantage point of where we have studied history, we saw that there were great sacrifices that were made from our parents and grandparents to be a part of the civil rights movement. You know,
exactly.
Looking at moving forward, Byron is saying, hey, we're not willing to give up anything. I mean, are you seeing the same thing? And what do we need to do to kind of penetrate through those barriers to be able to give up something to gain the greatest reward, which is some level of respect, dignity, freedom, justice, and equality?
I think people have become complacent and perhaps overwhelmed.
Complacent and overwhelmed. Wow.
Yeah. Because there's so much going on.
Yes, ma'am.
And people live every day to survive. Remember one time I was on your show, I told you about the term that I coined called survivonomics. Survivonomics is based on how you behave, your behavior in terms of survival. It's a blend of two sciences, you know, survival from a behavior perspective and economics from an economics perspective. What is it? What's the cost you pay for being black in America? What's the cost of neoliberalism as it relates to our black neighborhood? All of these things. So I think we have a diverse group of folks. Some people who want to roll their sleeves up and say, let's get the fight on.
Yeah.
And some people who have been fighting so long that they can't fight anymore. They need help. They need somebody to nudge them, to pull them along. They're hopeless. And bear in mind, all of these things that we have been discussing on this show and many of your other shows are intergenerational. They've been going on for decades, passed down.
So whose responsibility is it if it's an intergenerational dilemma? Whose responsibility is it to really pick up some of this burden and get the ball rolling again?
Well, are you referring to responsibility in terms of the individual, the community, the society, the...
Well, let's do the individual and the community. Just because
okay.
I feel like we have these things, these big conversations, and it's outside of us, it becomes society needs to do this. People should go and do that. And it's like, a wish list for Santa. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not real.
This is my ideology. And I'm going to tell you two things. I'm allergic to unemployment and incarceration.
You said you are allergic to unemployment and incarceration. Okay, Dr. Edwards.
Right. I'm allergic to those things.
Yes, ma'am.
But I don't see where people cannot unite. Back when I was growing up, I don't want to tell my age, but I'm happy. It's a privilege to live to be my age these days. People galvanized. There was unity. And people
fought for what they felt was right.
Right.
They didn't give up. They didn't have, we have tons of more than what people had when I was growing up.
Sure.
And they fought. People galvanized, they organized, and they took back their communities. They held one another responsible. They held political people responsible. They were mindful where they spent their dollars. They grew their own foods. They were able to manage conflict and disagreement.
So with that, Doc, then you essentially are saying that we need to remove all of the egos, the titles, move all of the personal interests, and get back into the communal interests.
Well, you know, Cornel West said it best. He said, particularly with academia, and I'm glad I'm not in that statistic, that at a certain point in the trajectory, some people went from a we mode to an I mode. It's like, I got mine, you got yours again. That ain't how it's supposed to work. Because the bottom line, several civil rights leaders, Fannie Lou Hamer, Harriet Tubman, people said, none of us are free until we all are. So you can lose all of the other stuff.
Right. Right. And,
you know,
and because they saw themselves as being a part of the
something greater than themselves.
Right, right, no doubt. And they were part
and
of a global community.
That's how we made it back then with nothing.
And see, the enemy
and
of
now,
all, but Dr. Edwards, and I want to get to this. I just want to mention this point. The enemy of our rise, and I'm not talking particularly white people. There are black people who are against the rise of black people. I'm saying any person, whether you're black, white, Asian, Latino, that don't want to see black people rise, not at the detriment of others, but for the benefit of the world. Any person that falls in that category. So the enemy of our rise, understand that principle you just laid out, Dr. Edwards. And as a result of that, have done as much as they can do to stop those efforts, to stop that from happening. I know
right.
that.
And guess what? We take the bait.
Right. We absolutely do. Doc, I want to go to the phone line. We got Liv, Scott, Donovan, and Benjamin. Liv, talk to me. What's your take?
So much, Sharad, for taking the call. And Dr. Edwards, thank you so much for your wealth of knowledge and just constantly empowering us, you know, with the important things in life for the black community. And, you know, like in school, I've been an educator, and you have to reteach and reteach and reteach. And I know, like you said, it sounds like you've been, you know, banging on these same walls, but please keep banging for our sake. I just wanted to say that to you. Now, concerning, you know, what's going on with the community, I agree with, you know, a lot in part with all the callers. I just want to say this. You know, we want the masses to join and come forward. It's a new day. It's a new time. You've already outlined a lot of the issues, Faraji, amongst us and ourselves, the I instead of the we and so forth. But, you know, I'm going to go biblical. And just for a simple lesson that I believe the Most High is calling us to a higher level. And the word says the kingdom suffers violence, but the violent take it back by force. And we're not necessarily talking about physical violence. I'm talking about that spiritual violence, that mental capacity of just no nonsense and let's get it done. But with that being said, Gideon's army, Gideon thought he needed 3,000 people to fight. But, you know, the Most High showed him, you know, the ones who were able to do this specific way of drinking water, identify who he needed, and it came down to 300. So, Faraji, I appreciate what you did this past weekend. You know, obviously, you and the group you were supporting are in the number. We have to figure it out about the masses and do the work that the Most High has called us to do. Mm-hmm. I know there's a work that's been pending on me for a while, and I thank you, Doctor. Edwards, because you've inspired me and pretty much renewed that, you know what, time is valuable and our people are, you know, in a battle. It is a spiritual battle, people.
Come on.
And we've got to come out of her. Who is her? This white America. I'm just going to be honest. We've got to come out. We've got to go back and learn how to build schools for ourselves. There's a school I know of, Empowerment. Temple has a school, and New Thomas has a school. We need to put our children in places that's going to nurture their mind and guard their spirit. Because these public schools, I'm going to tell you, it's just about a paycheck with these white teachers, and I know it. They're not vested in our children, and it's a war. You know, the classes I had when my children came to me, it was building them up. They went to the next class where there was a Caucasian teacher, tore them down. So it's not fruitful for our children to be in the public system. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Liv, and I appreciate you. Let's go back to the line. Yes, ma'am, Dr. Edwards.
Powerful.
It is. She was. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I appreciate, you know, the acknowledgement for what we did this weekend. But you're absolutely right, Liv. I think that it's so timely for us to be in a different space right now. And I'm going to go back to a saying that I totally agree with. Change comes from power, and power comes from organization. In order to act, people must get together. Change comes from power, and power comes from organization. Just marinate on that, folks. We cannot do this by ourselves. Now, that's why I wanted us to kind of speak to this issue, and I'm going to bring it up just really quickly. But the fact of there are folks that are saying, look, there's that talk about defunding the police. But the real issue is that now that the crime rate has gone up in a lot of major cities, and the other night, Dr. Edwards, we talked about there were 12 mass shootings in America over the weekend.
Yep. Hey, brother.
Yes, ma'am.
Faraji, can I share just one quick thing with you? One of my favorite books that I read in public health is called American Apartheid by Douglas Massey and Nancy Denton, great scientist. And I want to share one of his quotes with you real quick. He says that systematic segregation of African Americans led to the creation of an underclass community as residents adapt increasingly to harsh environmental conditions. They're under a climate of racial isolation. They evolve attitudes, behaviors, and practices that further marginalize their neighborhoods and undermine their chances of success in mainstream society, American society, that is, which in turn make them turn on one another.
Wow. I want to let's go back to the phone lines very quickly. Let me hear from Benjamin, then I'm gonna share with you. We probably won't be able to get through all of this idea of refunding the police because of the crime rate, but tonight. So we're gonna try to come back to it a little bit tomorrow. But let's go to Benjamin. Benjamin, thank you for your patience.
Yeah, hi. Did you hear me pretty good?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we view the way we condition our minds, and I'm the first one talking to myself. I condition my mind, and I love God, I love the Lord, I do all that. I try to keep him number one and let him know he the head of all sources and resources. But the frequencies that I'm connected to is so traditional, and I'm so accustomed to it, and I love it, man. I love my hip-hop, I love my rap videos, I love the news at night and all through the day and what we see there. And those frequencies keep my mind conditioned, and then that's the lens that I look through when I see people of color. And we all look at each other the same way because we are all in the same hip-hop, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I ain't.
It's radio news. It's just So, but hey, you know.
You know, you got to change that frequency, though. That's what I'm. That's the good part. You recognize that there needs to be a change in the frequency.
I'm never going to do it all the way because I came up with LL, with Nas, with everyone from the beginning.
Same man.
And I love it, man. I've always been in the city. I can tell you a lot of stories and hope one day I could be out there with you when we go for walks. But I really don't want to see your face, man. I love your voice, man. I don't want to see your face, man. I just like, I don't want to know that.
Don't mess it up.
Ain't real or something, you know what I mean? I like it, man.
I appreciate that. But look, no, I'm just saying, though, Benjamin, that the fact is, like, the hip-hop, like, I love hip-hop. I grew up with it. But I know that certain things I can't entertain anymore as a grown man because if I'm trying to go higher in my understanding, higher in my value.
But what can we do to balance it? Because I'm not the only one, man. A lot of us, man.
Look, check this out. You got to find alternative form of entertainment. Like, for example, I listen to a lot of Christian rap. I listen to Christian hip-hop. And I'm like, you know, from the classics of Lecrae to a lot of these brothers and sisters who I mean, they're just different messaging. And it's not just related just to hip-hop. I'm saying that you have to seek alternative forms of edification. And that's the big thing. You got to seek it because it's not going to be always out there. Even locally, we have artists who are creating fantastic music, right? And that are using knowledge, wisdom, and understanding in their music.
And man, so, I'll be reminiscing, man, on Ozone, Turbo, Special K. Remember
right.
Ozone?
Oh, yeah. Come on, brother. Come on.
Purple Rain.
So check this out.
You had B Street, you had Crush Brew.
But check this out.
That's like my home.
Here's the thing, though, Benjamin, and I appreciate you, brother. I really do. The thing is, if we don't make a conscious decision, getting into the habits of making intentional, conscious decisions about small things, then there's no way in the world we're going to be able to make intentional, conscious decisions about big things, about such as movements, such as changing the system of racism and systemic oppression. If we can't even make an intentional, conscious decision about changing what we listen to, something that we have power and control over. We don't have control over the system of white supremacy, but we have power to control most of the messages. And so if you take that small step in that direction, then boom, you build up the confidence to be able to get out there into the street. You might be saying, well, why don't I have the power to do the things that I know it's the right thing to do, but I just don't have the willpower to do it because we haven't built up the faith and the confidence in ourselves to be able to do those things. But I heard Minister Farrakhan put it like this. He said, if you are able to change who you are on the inside, then you'll be able to change the things on the outside of you. And that's where we are. And Dr. Edwards, and I think that a lot of us tend to believe that the inside, the relationship of what's going on in our heads, our hearts, our minds, and our spirits don't affect or are not related to what's happening on the outside. But you and I know they're not just related. They are the reasons why these things are in existence. Those two forces exist within opposites one another, because they serve as a certain point of balance for each other.
Exactly.
So that's why, you know, so brother, I mean, I don't want you to think that you don't have power. Start from building yourself from the inside out instead of the outside in. You can't talk about systemic racism, but then you listen to music that calls black men N-words and black women B-words.
Right.
It just doesn't fit. It's not going to be consistent. And everything you say and everything, your action, you might say one thing, but your actions are complete opposite. And so you're going to be in this constant dilemma. And when you're in a constant dilemma, you're in a confused state and you're not moving. You're just standing there, just confused as all outdoors. And so, I think it's important that I'm glad you brought that up, Benjamin. But I think it's important that you start building. You start changing the small things that you have power over, which are the choices that you make on the inside. And then guess what? And Dr. Edwards, you can speak to this as we close out. Making the intentional decision to get involved. You don't have to wait for a big moment like George Floyd's death. You can say, you know what, enough is enough. Let me get involved. Doc, you got the final word on this.
We have to live on purpose.
Come on.
Yep. That's what we need to do.
So live on purpose.
Brother Faraji said, for the ride today, we have to live on purpose. We have to advocate on purpose.
Mm. I love it. Dr. Edwards,
otherwise, we can't wait for somebody to save us. We got to save ourselves and help save others.
The problem has always been, Dr. Edwards, you and I know it. We've been taught that the Superman is on the outside of us.
Yep. That's what we need to do. If everybody made a contribution, we could begin to see progress.
There it is. There it is. Dr. Larice Edwards, Director of the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. Dr. Edwards, it's always a pleasure. I really enjoy talking to you and for you to share your insight and your wisdom with us. Thank you so much for joining us for the special conversation.
Always count on me.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Folks, that's going to do it for me. I thank each and every one of you for being a part of the conversation. Man. We're going to try to do our best to help our brother peers up in Bel Air. But more importantly, let's do our best to help ourselves. Let's start building on the outside. Let's make sure that we take this moment, reflect on this moment, learn from this moment as we talk about what's next for racial justice in this country. The racial justice can only be justified, or only can happen, if we as the people, as citizens of this country, have decided that enough is enough. Because dissatisfaction brings about 100% change. But unless we are totally dissatisfied about who we are and where we are, then we will not see the change that we deserve. And we will never, never gain. Folks, I thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another exciting edition. Thank you to my team, my man Dre Day and Demi Goff, my producer. Stay tuned. Up next is Lolo within the groove. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong, stand for what's right, while being yourself in the process. God willing, we'll talk tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. Remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.